Well, our next guest would have something to say about Pagans Among Us, because his name is Chris Riley. But let's go back to 1938 and a movie called Boys Town. It was, in every sense of the word, a Hollywood classic. 30 years on, a young boy in Australia named Chris Riley sat down to watch it, and it changed his life. At that moment, he decided to become a priest and work with homeless teenagers. Father Riley worked at Australia's version of Boys Town for many years, but in 1991 he decided to set up his own organisation to help homeless kids. He called it Youth Off the Streets. This year it will celebrate its 20th birthday. The statistics show that it's helped around 55,000 children with food, accommodation, counselling and education. Next year, Youth Off the Streets will run a budget of around $18 million. But statistics can't tell the whole story about Father Chris Riley or his organisation. Certainly those figures don't explain how a young man, who says himself that he felt at times worthless and openly admits that as a teenager he sometimes prayed to die, would create an organisation devoted to helping others. This week I went out to see Father Chris Riley in his office in the west of Sydney, and I began by asking him, what was it about the movie Boys Town that so inspired him?
I feel intensely people's pain. And when I saw the Boys Town movie, and I guess I had been through that sorts of pain myself with, you know, at times praying to die. And so I understood. It just horrified me that kids didn't have anyone, that kids were kicked out of homes, they were orphans. And I have always had the capacity to intensely bear pain.
Were you ever targeted? Were you ever abused? Because when I read you're writing about your life, yes, you can empathise, but you seem to have experienced something when you talk about other children. Was there anything like that there?
Yeah, certainly not sexual assault. But close. I mean, I was targeted, but I am a sort of person that I'm not a touchy-feely person. I don't like people touching me. And when this guy said to me, look, you hurt your leg at football, can I rub it? And I said, my mum doesn't rub my leg even. And so that kept him back. And he obviously, over the time, had abused other kids. I wasn't aware of that until 20 years later. But when you hear, you know, for 35, 36 years, almost daily, the impact of sexual assault, you could not but grow in empathy, or you couldn't do the job at all. And I think I'm surprised that people almost throw themselves at me in terms of their telling me their story. I mean, I was in Parliament House and one lady came up to me, she was about my age, and she said, where were you? I said, where was I when? And she said, when I was a kid, I was being abused, and if you had been around, I would have thrown myself into your arms. I'm thinking, wow, I'd never met you before.
Because you do make the point that up to 80 or 90% of the children that you see on the streets have been sexually abused or beaten. That seems an extraordinary figure.
Well, I am working with the most troubled areas of kids, so you're going to find that. If I was in a mainstream school, those figures wouldn't apply. But very often kids abused at home are sexually and physically and emotionally abused. But certainly the hardcore kids in the early days, when we only work with hardcore, it would have been 90% of the boys and 99% of the girls. That's the hardcore. We now work in communities, so it's not as extreme. But, I mean, I know in one community we're working, we believe 80% of the kids are being abused in that town. And no one does anything about it. And that's my biggest worry in Australia. When we talk about child sexual assault, no one wants to talk about it. And therefore, by not talking about it, it continues at alarming rates.
I mean, that is, again, an extraordinary figure about a community you have just described. What can we do to try and stop that?
In some communities, it's really, really tough. A simple thing, I'm not always that popular in some of the communities I work in. Everyone's desperate to have me there until I open my mouth, and then they say, go away. But in one town, for example, I was on national TV saying, you know, we've discovered young kids here, young girls between 10 and 15 who go up to the pubs and clubs at 3 in the morning and prostitute for the price of one can of beer. Obviously, the mayor hated that being said and asked me to leave his town, and I said, too late. But what we did, we employ young people from the community and we train them as youth workers. I just put my youth workers there at 3 in the morning, and they knew the girls, and they would say, look, come home with us, and they'd get in the car and they would take them home. So it was easier to stop it just by having people there who knew them and talked them into not doing it and coming home with them. So you've got to put people out there who are trusted And you've got to have people there in the first place, and you can actually stop a lot of that stuff.
I mean, you have spent your life demonstrating that no child is born bad. But when I read the public response, and certainly often government responses, there is a view that basically these kids are criminals, lock them up, and at times throw away the key.
And what I say to them is, you're causing the violence because I have been preaching and preaching for 20 years to do it differently. You won't do it differently. And I keep saying to you, if you don't do it differently, violence will keep escalating. And I say there's no such thing as a bad kid, born bad, that is. But a lot of kids have no empathy, no feeling, no compassion, because at the age of 6 months, and babies when they come home, try to engage with parents or whoever bends over. If no one smiles back, that baby's smile dies. And many of our kids, I believe, have had their smile killed, soul murdered. Therefore, they have no one to help negotiate with problems. They can't love anyone. They can't make friends. They can't do any of the normal things. And therefore, they grow into what I call to be sociopaths. They're not born like that, but because of the way they're treated, they eventually have no feelings about themselves or anyone else. They'll self-mutilate, they'll hurt someone else and have no compassion. They don't understand that. And it takes us about 2 to 3 years to change that, and you can change it, but it takes a lot of intensive therapy. And I think if we take that approach, we could make a much safer community.
Governments, of course, would say, in talking about doing it a different way, they would say, well, look, why are we so interested in the person who commits the crime rather than the victim? What do you say to that?
I would say to the government, you couldn't give a damn about the victims, because those kids will go in there into a detention centre and they will come out and hurt many, many more people, because what we do know is jail intensifies resentment and anger, and violence is always comes from a place of disrespect about something. And so those sort of things, whereas if you get a kid into a therapy, it's not about letting them off. It's about we believe in restorative justice, where they have to be accountable but not made to feel worthless, because that sense of worthlessness drives levels of violence. I remember Bob Carr saying, when I catch these kids, we will humiliate, degrade and traumatise them. So I was on the next show the next day saying, good on you, Bob, you're going to take this state further down the line of violence, because those strategies are proven to escalate levels of violence. But we don't have governments that base their decisions around good evidence and research.
So if you go back 3 decades to when you began this, essentially for you, what's been a crusade, do you think we are doing better in the way we treat those children who are in an acute situation, or is it worse?
It's certainly different. The number of hardcore street kids is almost, you know, in a city, there's none there or very few there, whereas it used to be hundreds every night. We're not in the suburbs. That we're allowing kids to be overcome by what we call the psychology of hopelessness, where they have no one interested in them and they just feel beaten up for so long. It's getting worse. And when I talk about, I was talking about Blacktown, for example, you know, it's got the highest crime rate in nearly every category. And we go, oh, how terrible that is. If we actually built a youth centre there that's big and useful, because it's the largest suburb in the country, 27% of Blacktown's population is under 18, 38% under 25. And there's nothing for kids to do. There's 200 different nationalities and communities. Nothing for kids to do, so they're going to do crime. Whereas we proved at Macquarie Fields, just by a presence after the riots, crime rate's down by 40%. And I'll guarantee we'll have it down by at least another 20 or 30 once our youth centre's up and is open for kids 24 hours a day in some cases. So you can bring about incredible change with very little, as we have seen in the suburbs we're working at. Crime rate comes down, but we don't get governments acknowledging that.
Setting aside, if you like, the emotion of what we need to do for children, if you had somebody who is a doubter about what you're saying, what's the practical reason that we should put time, money and resources into these kids?
The practical reason is that if we don't, they're going to misbehave and they're going to do crime and they're going to hurt people, they're going to do drugs and crime. We've got to educate them properly, and very often our schools expel. I don't know how they get away with this, by the way. Our schools are full of kids who are being expelled or kicked out from high schools run by the department. So we need to look at facilities. I guess one thing that really bugs me, building the education revolution, that was a joke for me. You know, I'm a teacher and I'm masters of special ed and all that sort of stuff. We didn't need buildings. Some people didn't give it to them if they needed, but we needed access for kids with disabilities. We needed speech therapists. We needed psychologists, psychiatrists. We needed all those sorts of human resources, because you'll have a wraparound service around a difficult kid rather than saying, this poor teacher got 30 kids. Well, you have to go because I don't have wraparound services for you.
So the picture you're painting is, of course, one where funding is needed. And as a result of that, it'd be fair to say that you've got yourself caught in a public sense in quite a debate, because you have argued not to tax poker machines more heavily, because in fact it's many of those clubs that actually fund your services. You've got an extraordinarily large organisation from its humble beginnings, but is that a deal with the devil in any sense?
No, not for me, it's not. I believe the majority of people go there are responsible. I think clubs certainly have Gambling Anonymous and they have programs for them, and it's a place to be for most people. And it is true that I only get 35% government funding. Most organisations get nearly 100%, but I move quickly. And I'm also outspoken. When I resigned from the Premier's Council, Homelessness Council, in protest against their lack of embracing the Juvenile Justice Review, I became not popular with that government then. So because I speak out, and it's really important I do, I still keep opening because we have the public support. And when it comes to clubs and pubs, we get a minimum amount. It might seem like we get a lot. My budget's $18 million a year, and it goes up by $1 million nearly every year because I move into a new territory, moving into Penrith in a couple of weeks. They would be about maybe 2 or 3% of my budget. It's very minuscule.
Is there any government in Australia at the moment that you think is serious about combating the problem of child abuse, essentially, and children on the streets?
No. I've never been in a worse place with governments at the moment, I have to say. The way they've spent money is just unbelievable. The way they've wasted it, you know, I'll ask for a little bit of money, and I asked Jenny Macklin, and I said to her, you know, I need money for this program, that is to transition kids back into the community. You just can't put them back in because they'll fail. And eventually she said, well, we don't have funding for that sort of work. And I was cranky. I said, but you had it for pink bats. You actually had it. You had $500 million to fix the problems. $500 million for that. And then $40 million to fight the mining tax with your advertising. I said, I can't believe you have the audacity to say that. And she says to me, oh, you're making me feel bad. And I said, I'm making you feel bad. They don't put priority onto the kids. The only politician I've trusted with kids was Maurice Yemma. He did stuff for mental health with kids. He had all those things happening. He's the only person I've ever been able to believe he had an interest and love for kids.
It's 20 years for your organisation, an anniversary. We've talked about what's gone on, what you've done, but what's your hope for the future?
That'll disappoint you. I don't have a hope for the future. I have no five-year plan, and that really frustrates the hell out of board members and corporates, because I don't have this vision of conquering the world. It's just, where's the next problem that you want me to come to, and I'll go there and help you. I don't want to have a plan to be in every state in Australia. I don't have a need to go on forever. I'm happy to die and just, you know, walk away. I don't need things named after me. I'm really simple. It's just about tomorrow, what's it bring? So at the moment, my next venture, if people accept it, is when I saw in the Telegraph, I think, that Lockyer, Mayor, said, please don't forget us into the future. So I emailed the Mayor and said, I'm happy to put two youth workers up there to work in your community, and I'll employ them from your community. They won't be coming from Sydney. He hasn't got back to me yet. But that's where I will see the plight. I took kids up to work at Brisbane. Our kids all had to volunteer. So had amazing youth workers up there working in there. We went to the bushfire. So it's about going where trouble is and going quickly, but not planning to go, we'll go there and we'll go there. That's, for me, is crazy. I can't think like that.
Father Chris Riley, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Father Chris Riley is the head of Youth Off the Streets, and just in case you're a little bit rusty on New South Wales politics, Maurice Yemma, who Father Riley talked about, was the Premier of New South Wales between 2005 and 2008.